So welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Pain Cub talk show here live on YouTube on Sunday evenings. I'm delighted to be joined this week by Ian Tavener, also known as Mr. Cookfulness. And we'll be talking tonight. Yes, the t-shirt shows. We'll be talking tonight about how he uses something like cooking to help manage long-term pain, as well as you know, getting a bit of understanding about the backstory behind that pain. And also, I'm very much looking forward to hearing about all the wonderful things that Ian does to help raise awareness and inspire other people. So welcome, Ian. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm really good. Thank you. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. By this point of the week, I'm always a little bit flustered, but I feel like I'm ready to end the week off on a high. So thank you so much for joining us. Obviously, I think we've crossed paths a few times. It's the first time we've been able to get actually on a call. So I'm really excited about this purely from like a personal point of view. So we won't dive too much into detail because we're going to go through all of that. But just for anyone that has never met you before, do you want to just give like an overview of you know, where you're from and who you are, and then we'll dive into your sort of the health backstory.
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm Ian Tavener. I am Mr. Cookfulness, and I grew up in the Isle of Man many moons ago. So I'm an islander. Traveled around with my work before settling now in Southampton, the south coast, where everything changed because of illness. And now I'm sort of using my experiences to help people find a bit of joy in the kitchen.
Brilliant. Thank you. That was perfect. Because then it allows us to go through without going into too much detail. So thank you. You've obviously done this before. before we get into the cooking side, which I'm sure a lot of people are here to hear, where did your story start with, you know, we can cover, I understand you've got a couple of health conditions, but, you know, can focus on the pain bit, but where did all of that start for you, if you don't mind sharing?
No, not at all. It started looking back in my late sort of mid to late 30s, so about 15 years ago. At the time, didn't see it, but now I can look back and see where it came from. So initially, it was my mental health that started to go first. So dealing with anxiety and panic attacks, which I'd never had before. And that was a real big shock to me, but it just seemed like that was what was happening. And I sort of just shoved it away. And in those days, you didn't talk about those sort of things. And then I remember I came back from, I used to work in financial services. Woo. And I came back off a trip and I just got this awful pain in my chest. It just wouldn't go away. And I thought, oh, what the heck is this? So I went to the doctors and they sort of said, oh, let's get you in, and sort of tubes in everywhere and whatever. And it was almost about 5 or 6 months before anything actually happened. And they just by chance saw that I had celiac disease, so I couldn't have gluten or wheat. And they said, oh, that's it. And I was like, oh, okay. But it wasn't it. And it carried on. And it started to just get worse and worse and worse over time. And the pain was spreading. And my mental health was deteriorating. And I think probably after 2 or 3 more years, it just crashed. And I was actually in hospital going in for another sort of stab in the neck with some injections. And I just broke down completely. And that was the big drop, really.
That it's really refreshing. Obviously, it's a horrible experience, but it's so refreshing to have another male on this show sharing the mental health bit, because, you know, I looked back at my story and, you know, I didn't get the psoriatic arthritis bit of my condition until my mid-20s, but that was preceded by a massive mental health issue. And I went through early intervention and I had depression. It was like diagnosed as like a form of psychosis. But now looking back in hindsight, I was flaring and I didn't know how to handle it. And had to say, thank you for coming on and just straight off the bat, you know, saying that, because it will help people out there.
Well, yeah. And I think that for a long time, I hid all of that. I hid the mental health side, and it was the physical bit that I thought, well, that's something people can get to grips with. I didn't really want to share it, even with my family. But now I've flipped that completely around. And the mental health side, I think, is just as important. And it's crucial, and managing that every day is just as hard as managing your physical health.
Yeah, Yeah, it really is. And like I say, for a lot of our conditions, they are interlinked. And yeah. it's Stress Awareness Month, and we all know how that links in as well and feeds yeah. a lot of this stuff. So you obviously, you went through all that experience. And am I right in thinking you've got a sort of neurological disorder? Was that the first bit, or was it the other conditions that came?
Like the first thing I had, and it was almost by they tried everything else, and we really can't find a sort of physical condition. And they said, go to this pain person, they'll know. And it was they said, you've got fibromyalgia, and I said, I have no idea what that is. Looked it up and thought, well, that looks like it could be it, because it's sort of suggesting what's going on. But it didn't feel like everything, and it just felt like that was it. Now you've got a label, off you go. And there wasn't really a lot of help for that. And I think, unfortunately, by knowing, I got worse, because I knew I had something, but I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know how to deal with it. And I ended up more and more of a recluse as a result. And I think it was only another couple of years later where I was diagnosed as functional neurological disorder, because I was getting tremors and seizures, as well as the pain. And that just didn't seem right to fit with the fibro side. And then once I got that diagnosis, it was like, right, okay. And arthritis at the same time, because I'd had some scans and they found that my hips were just basically crumbling to bits. So I had to have both hips replaced in my sort of mid-40s, which again was an experience that I didn't enjoy, because it was supposed to be like, oh, great, you can move again. But everything else was just, you know, crashing in on top. So all of that with the depression, anxiety, created a really sort of tsunami of pain and anguish, really.
And how was that, Matt? Because obviously there's multiple angles there, and we know particularly in this country things can be a little bit siloed. So I'm probably making an assumption about your experience here. But how was that? Yeah. How was that managed when presumably you got rheumatology and neurology and, you know, all them other things going on? What was it? Yeah. A joined up approach, or was it mixed messages from everyone?
It was the silo of all silo. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I didn't know any different either. You'd get sent to one appointment and they'd say, right, we're going to be dealing with this bit. And you'd come home, and then you'd get off to another bit maybe 3 months later, and then you'd be somewhere else. And then they'd say, oh, yeah, we need to help you with your depression. And then I'd go somewhere else, but none of it was joined. So I probably maybe got a day or two of, yeah, that's a good idea, until everything else all wrapped on itself again. So probably 3 or 4 years of this, of the silos, before someone finally decided to change that, which was when I went to Bath, to the pain center there.
They do wonderful things there, but yeah. I'm not interacting with them personally, but I hear lots and lots of good things. And I'm guessing up until that point, nobody thought to ask about mental health or signpost you to mental health support or factor that in, how that was impacting you?
No, not at all. And no one even said that this could be the situation, even though right at the very beginning, the anxiety and the panic attacks were what was triggering where it all began. And you know, I would talk about that all the time, but it was almost just put to the side that said, it's the pain that's doing this, and here we go. But even then, it wasn't any help, because no one really knew what to do with it.
And the whole time you're just left in limbo trying to work out what's what.
Yeah, and with my wife, and we had two young daughters at the time, and it's really difficult because they grew up with a dad that they didn't really see very much, because I was either sort of shut away in the bedroom under the covers, because I thought that was the right way to cope with it. I thought it would be best for them if they didn't see me in pain. We sort of created a sort of detached family within a family. So they carried on doing what they did. And my wife unbelievably did everything for so long, caring for me and looking after them. Looking back, it was the wrong thing to do, you know, because we really needed to try and get ourselves together. But it just felt like that was the way to deal with it, because we had no other answers.
And the thing is, you find your way through that, but without the guidance, we all blame ourselves. Like every single one of us that live these long term health conditions are constantly, putting things on our own shoulders. But if you aren't getting that support to signpost you or show you a better way to manage it, how was like the pain side of that treated? Because you know, as somebody who's had experiences myself, and there's lots of people in this community talk a lot about, you know, being told just keep taking your painkillers. Did you have a sort of similar experience?
It was medication and injections and everything. There was nothing around other ways to deal with it other than we'll keep piling up the medication. And obviously, looking back, the more you get used to the medication, the more you need. And the more you need, the worse it was. My mental health was getting because these things were just getting. I was on, I had patches all over my back. I was taking opioids. I had you name it was going on, and I partially don't remember a lot of what was going on because I was so full of this stuff. It was affecting me that I couldn't function. I didn't know what was going on. But it was you just take for granted that it's the right thing to do to take these things because they tell you this will be good. Have some of this. Or let's get you into hospital and we'll put some steroids in you and in your neck or whatever, and that should help it. And that's what happens. And we sort of called it here in our house the groundhog years because the days just kept doing the same thing over and over again. It was medication, sleep, maybe say hello, medication, sleep, maybe say hello, and that's pretty much what happened for a long time.
And the thing is that obviously then just sends your mental health spiraling as well. And trust me, I've very much been there where I felt like I'd lost everything. And I used to get a lot of, like I say, keep taking painkillers, keep taking painkillers. And at the time, I'd just become a dad, and I just felt like a zombie. I wasn't present, and then that would affect my mental health. And I don't know about you, I find the more I was medicated, the lower my mood was, the more negative effects I then had from being on that stuff. Because I was waking up in the middle of the night, because if you have a negative thoughts and you're taking all this stuff, then obviously it's not going to help feed into that, is it?
No, absolutely. And you just get sort of you look forward to the next patch going on because it's going to help you, you think. But actually, all it's really doing is feeding your habit of needing this stuff. But you don't really need it for the right reasons or something. And when I went through the sort of trying to come off some of these things, my God, it was awful. But I knew at the end of it that I'd feel a lot better as a result. And when I came off some of these opioids and patches, I actually felt better than I did when I was on them, which just it sounds wrong, but I think because mentally, as you said, it taken me down an awful path. So yes, my pain probably was a bit worse, but I felt so much better in my head as a result.
And did you find you got any sort of like education with any? It's horrible because I'm half laughing because I already know what the answer is going to be from management. But so when you were given this stuff, were you told what it was trying to achieve? Were you told if it was long, short term, what the desired outcome, what, et cetera, or was it literally just take this whilst we work out
No,
your better
and
option?
I didn't know what was for mental health, what was for physical health. I just took them because it was this is what you're supposed to have. And now, obviously, if I had my time again, I'd go and ask what are all these for, what does that do? But when you're in a position where you're not functioning anyway, you don't ask, you just want to take just to try and help. So yeah, no, I didn't get any sort of thoughts as to what it was I was taking.
And I think the good thing is, though, for people today is like this sort of stuff exists. What you're doing, what I'm doing. I think you only have to go back 5 years or so, and it wasn't there. And I remember saying to my wife, like when I started all of this, it was literally because I didn't want anyone else to go down that route I had of being completely uninformed, not involved in any decisions, just being a passenger to sort of like my own care. And so my big change was getting onto like pain management and pain management therapy and stuff like that. What was your change? Because clearly what you're doing today is very similar reasons, I'm guessing, because of the same as me. So what changed things for you?
Well, it was when I went, as I say, I went to the Bath pain centre, and I was on a 4-week residential program, and I went in with no expectations because I've been on so many things that just didn't do anything. But they were the first who said, right, we're looking at everything here. We're looking at physical health, mental health. We're going to sort of unpick a little bit and try and get you back. And they asked, I just remember specifically a question they asked me, what did I want? And I was like, what? What kind of a question is that? And I said, I want to be well. They said, no, let's be realistic. What do you want? And I just thought, and I said, you know what? I want to be back part of my family again. I'd love to be, the word you use, present in my family again. And they said, right, that's the easy bit. Now, what are you going to do to get there? And cooking was what I thought, oh, do you know what? I used to like cooking. If I can start cooking again, maybe I'll be visible because I'll have to get up. I'll be making breakfast. I'll be making lunch and whatever. This will be perfect. I'll do cooking. And that was what I thought would be a great way back, not realizing how hard it was going to be to actually do it. But it gave me the oomph to say, right, I always have in my head my family now. And I have a sort of picture which I always bring back, which is around the dinner table. There's four chairs, and my wife and my two daughters are on one, and my one's missing. And that was the years where I wasn't around. So now I'm going to be on that chair. You know, come rain, hail, or shine, I'll be on that chair. So it always motivates me to say, right, that's the chair I'm going to be in. How am I going to do it each day? So that was really where it all started from.
That's an amazing image. And it's like having that, like I often talk about, if I didn't have my son, so my permanent pain issue started literally the same month my son was born. And I'm sure stress was a part of that. But I always argue, I genuinely, I don't even want to think about where I would be if that hadn't have coincided with me becoming a dad, because I don't know what my, you know, it sounds horrible for my poor wife, but like, I just can't imagine like anything pulling me out of that place that I was, other than seeing that baby. And so that really resonates with me. I'm quite emotional hearing you say that. And I think it's really important for people to understand that it's just like, whatever, you've got to find something that you love and care about. It's like, for me, it was writing. Yours was cooking. And it really doesn't, and it doesn't have to be comfortable, does it? Like, obviously, you've probably found lots of ways to adapt, but you said it was like quite difficult at first. So do you want to maybe talk a little bit about that journey?
It was a disaster, to be brutally honest. I mean, everything that sort of came at me, you sort of realize how wrong the kitchen is for people who are suffering physically or mentally, because it's inaccessible. There's hot things, heavy things, and there's lots of things that want to stab you. So it's not a great place. And I found that I couldn't do everything, a lot of things that I'd done before. And so initially it was like, oh God, here's another thing I'm going to have to stop doing because it's just not working. And my wife almost sort of physically accosted me and said, get back in there and you're going to do this. And you're going to, you know, you can do this because there are ways. And I started to work on, well, if that's not working for me, what could I do? Is there anything I could do? And there weren't really any sort of cookbooks out there that, because I'd sort of lost my ability to freestyle food. I couldn't just think of something. The sort of brain functional and the fog wouldn't allow me to go, oh yeah, let's just chuck this all in. I had to follow a recipe, and I'd open a book and look at it, and this just is making no sense to me. It's sort of gobbledygook, or I get halfway through and not really know what was going on. So it was, my wife encouraged me to say, right, unwind everything, go backwards, go back to that feeling of you want to start cooking again. And how would you do it? You know, forget about what other people are doing. What would you do? And I was like, oh, hello, I've got a bit of a free go at this. So I started to put down ways of how I was looking at it. And it sort of turned into a cookbook out of sort of nowhere. And I just did it really as a passion to help me drive. And then my wife said, well, why don't you publish it? And I was like, yeah, right, that's a good idea. Who's going to buy this? But I self-published it. And it sort of springboarded to where I am now. So the book came out and things started to get a bit more interesting, and people were sort of like, well, let's see who this guy is behind this yellow book. And it sort of went from there. But it came from things going awfully wrong to thinking, well, hang on, I've got that picture of that table with the four chairs, I've got to be in it. So what am I going to do to get there?
That's just amazing. And guys, anyone watching this back, either the recording or the audio version, we'll put a link to all of Ian's work where you can find these things in the show notes and description. But I suppose what I want to sort of just pick it a little bit, Ian, is like, I'm guessing when you started off doing the cooking, you've done it because it was a previous passion and you've done it for you. You probably never saw it ever going on to help other people. Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And it was my way of getting back in. And I remember the first thing I made, and I think I just made some toast, and I hadn't done that for so long. And my daughters just went, yay! And I was like, what? And they said, it's just so good to see you here. And it was like, and that feeling of making something so small and celebrating it so highly has stuck with me. But yeah, it was never any thought that this could go anywhere other than it was to help me and the family. And then I think once the book came out and we started seeing reactions of people from all different walks of life saying, actually, I'm finding this really helpful and this is really useful. It suddenly thought, wow, well, if it's helping me and it's helping them, maybe it's going to help other people as well. And that's really where the sort of springboard came.
Yeah. And yeah, it just, did you find then there was like this like correlation between you exploring that, you know, that, because for me, I find when I'm being creative, my ability to distract myself from my pain is just like tenfold better. Did you have a similar experience? And how did that then look as you explored that in terms of your pain medication or how you sort of manage your conditions?
Yeah, it had a major effect, because the more I sort of was finding ways to cook, the more I wanted to cook, and the more my mental health was starting to look up a little bit, and I was starting to feel excited about things. I was starting to feel a little bit of pride and a bit of self-worth, the words I'd never even thought about for years, because they just weren't things that I associated with myself. And it sort of became that, well, actually, this is something. And because I was doing more, probably feeling more with it, I went to the doctors and I said, look, I'd like to look at some of the medication I'm on. You know, can it come down a bit, because I'm starting to feel a little bit more positive. And to be fair, my GP was brilliant. He said, look, we've got to take this slow. We've got to pick out the ones that are going to be the ones that aren't going to throw you off kilter, because we don't want to drop you back where you've been. So it was, you know, it took a long, long time, but it did start from a conversation of, I think I can manage my physical and mental health a bit better myself, so I don't necessarily need as much medication. And sometimes I'd come down and think, oh, I've gone too far, we need to come back up again. But it did help. The more I was going this way, the more the sort of medication was coming down a bit. But it took a couple of years before I was able to come, you know, and I'm still on, you know, quite an array of medication, but it's at a level that I feel comfortable with now, and I feel happy with. And maybe someday I'll come down a bit more, but at the moment, why would you upset the apple cart when things are just about, you know, where we want them?
And it's just a fine balance. I think it's really important for anyone listening to this. There is a place for medicine and there is a place for painkillers. And I have to lean on painkillers occasionally when things flare and everything else. But what we're talking about here is that power, that if you can find something you love to do, to act as a way of like a distraction. For me, it's what gets me out of bed in the morning. Like my wife will be so bored of hearing this, but it's like genuinely the whole advocacy thing and finding my voice and writing and doing this, talking to amazing people like you, Ian, it is literally, it gets me out of bed in the morning, because it that's, you need that something to look forward to, don't you? And clearly for you, it's cooking.
Without doubt. And, you know, and this, and likewise, being on your show is just fantastic, because I know there's people who'll be watching this who might not want to say anything, but they're hopefully going to find one little nugget that says, maybe I can try that. Now, I never had that. You never had that. That's why we're doing what we're doing, to try and help people find those things. And I've always said to people, you know, if I say 10 things and 9 of them you think are absolute codswallop, that's fine. But if one of them's, oh, maybe I can use that, then it's happy days for me, you know, and for you, I'm sure it's the same thing.
Yeah. And the thing is, the learner never ends as well. Like, you know, that dining table chair image thing is just going to stick with me. And I think that's a great one. And you've already sort of said something tonight, which I'm constantly banging the drum about that whole, excuse me, like asking me what I need, what hurts. And for you to get that moment going down to Bath where they asked that question, which clearly you weren't prepared for, but it is, you said, what sort of question? This is the best question. It's just, you wouldn't have known it at the time.
No.
That gives me tremendous hope. So I think anyone watching this, guys, who are in a lot of pain or just feeling hopeless, and we've all been there, these things are changing slowly, aren't they? And I can't remember now off the top of my head. I've got a bit of brain fog today. The time scale you said, but I'm presuming you see a difference in when you go to see your clinicians now in terms of the questions they're asking compared to when you first started this journey.
Yeah, totally. And even from when, you know, going to the doctors or going in to see them is a better experience than it was before. I still have the issues where if I go in with something that isn't to do with it, that it's a more automatically related back to what you've got. Oh, it's probably to do with your arthritis or your FND. It's like, I don't think it is. But now I'm able to articulate that a little better. And I feel that by being able to question a bit more I have a better relationship with my clinicians than before, because it was very one way originally. But now I still, you know, find it hard to question someone and say, well, he must know what he's doing, or she must know what's going on. But actually, I can now feel like saying to them, what does this do? And what would happen if I didn't take it is the biggest question I now ask. What would be the result of me not having this? And that baffles them sometimes, because it's like, well, you'll stay like you are. I said, but if I have it, then what happens? Will my pain improve? But what's going to happen to my, you know, to the old noggin? Yeah. And it's like, so those are the sort of things that I can ask now, because I feel able to, but you can't, and you don't even know to ask those questions. So I think helping people to arm themselves, or even, you know, if you're going with someone to the GP because you feel you can't talk or can't articulate it, just ask them to ask those questions. It'll help an awful lot, and probably save quite a bit of sort of long-term time that you'll waste sort of trying lots of things until you get to the place you need to be.
I think you need to give yourself an awful lot of credit there, because one of the things you said in the middle of that was about, you know, asking about, okay, physically, but how does it affect my mental health? And that is such an important consideration that far too many people don't make that connection. It took me years to get to that point where, you know, where instead of chasing a magic bullet that I thought was just going to fix the pain bit, I didn't appreciate the impact. And it took being a parent, I think, for me to understand that, well, I can't be a zombie all day, regardless of what the pain level's like. So, yeah, I think that's really, so give yourself credit for that, because not many people get that. Some people don't get there at all. So the fact that you've...
No, I know. And I do feel, I feel genuinely lucky. And I try always to not come across as, you know, look at me, woohoo, because I know what it's like. So we've all, you know, I sort of see everybody at different levels along the road. And I'm just a bit further along, but there'll be a lot of people who are right at the beginning. And to say to them, come on, you know, snap out of it, just doesn't work. It's not, because I have to think about what would I have said if someone had said that to me.
Yeah.
I'd have just gone, yeah, right, yeah. Do one. So, yeah, it's constantly reminding yourself that everybody's in different places. So when I'm talking about things and trying to help people, I have to always remember how I was and how I could very easily be again if, you know, if I let things go.
Yeah. I think it's really important as well that we don't just share all the wins. You know, I'm always talking about the whole real life, not Instagram life or filtered life. And I don't always get the nicest messages in my inbox when I share the negative stuff. And that's just like, it's important for people to see the bad. So like for me, this week has been an absolute roller coaster, and I could have just celebrated all the wins and done lots of Photoshop pictures and filtered pictures of me and my son. But somebody out there needs to see that you can do all of this like awareness stuff or be having an impact and still feel like a failure sometimes, or make a mistake, or get your pacing wrong, or you know, all that sort of thing. So I think it's really important to remember that, you know, I think to inspire people, it can't just be the positives. It can't just be the standing on a stage bit, can it?
No, I agree. And you know, a couple of weeks ago, I think we're probably going to touch on it later, but I had a sort of a big event that I had to do. But 3 weeks before that, I had a massive sort of flare of my neurological disorder, and I lost most of my speech, and it was sort of slurring, and then I was sort of really struggling. And if that had happened, you know, a couple of weeks later, then I wouldn't have been able to do the show. But then I thought, well, actually, doing it like that is real. You know, it's real life. And what I don't do is when I'm in those sort of situations, I'll try and share, this is what's happening. Because you're right, if you only show the sort of peaks, people won't necessarily believe you or feel, you know, that they understand what you're saying. And I do find that a bit difficult at times when you see this sort of, whoa, look at us, we're all doing fantastically well. Yeah. And it's like, it's not real life, you know. Every day you don't know what's coming, and that's what it's like living with chronic illness. You just don't know what's coming next.
And I find it particularly cruel, because like there's a lot of evidence to suggest this whole social media thing and the constant notifications and best life thing is affecting everybody's mental health negatively. So whatever it must be doing to people that are dealing with an unfair hand that they've been dealt, you know, I'm so overly conscious of that. And like, it's like when I first started all this on camera stuff, I never used to wear black because I was worried about my psoriasis. And then I thought, well, no, like I wear black. That's all I pretty much wear. Why would I hide it? But it took me a long while to get to that point, to feel confident. But like you say, it's kind of like, it's like you, isn't it? Like, you know, you were invited to that event for a reason, for your background, for your condition and everything else. And then we sometimes slip into that apologizing for it, and we have to quickly sort of bring ourselves back out.
Yeah, totally. And what I sort of, some of the events that I do, what's so refreshing is that everybody sort of gets it. So you're at those sort of places where people are, have a variety of disabilities and illnesses, and you think, crikey, yeah, we're, you know, there's such a world out there of people who are all in different places and struggling at different times and doing different things. So when you get to share that with people, a lot of the times it's, people don't understand what you're talking about. But when you're sort of like this with a group of people here, you're probably all listening to this going, yeah, I think that's, yeah, I've been there, or yeah, that's me. And I think the bigger those groups get, the better it's going to be for everybody. So, you know, being here and you know, looking at what you do, it's amazing. You know, it's fantastic for so many reasons. And it helps you as well, I'm sure, because it gives you that extra boost of, yeah, this is good. You know, and just seeing one comment is like, that's really helped me. It's just amazing.
I often talk about, I'm really selfish, you know, it's my therapy. It just, you know, and I'm not ashamed to admit that, you know, and if I can help other people or give, create platforms for other people to share their story like you are today, then everybody wins. I don't see the negative in that. No. You've alluded to it, so let's get on to that. Nadex, how did you ever think when you started cooking that toast that you would end up on a stage at Nadex? And maybe just for anyone that isn't familiar, want to maybe explain what that expo is and you know how important it is.
So Nadex is it's at the NEC every year, and it's 2 days, and it's Europe's sort of largest disability expo, and it's a mixture of sort of trade and public. And I think it began more trade, sort of with, you know, wheelchairs and power chairs and assistance, etc., but it's gone more and more towards the sort of the public side. So they contacted me and said, look, we'd like to sort of introduce more life, real lifestyle type things in. I was like, okay. And they said, could you do a couple of cooking demos? And I said, have you got a kitchen? No. And I was like, right. And I thought, well, that's fine, you know, because I talk a lot about, one of the things I say is widening your kitchen. You don't have to be in the kitchen to be cooking. You can make food anywhere or prepare it where you feel more comfortable. So I thought, well, let's, you know, practice what I preach. So I said, can I have at least have a plug? And they said, yeah, you can have a plug, but just the one. So I had a plug and a table. And it was, so I didn't really know whether people would come along, you know, would people going to know who I am? You catastrophize everything. You always do when you've got mental health issues or physical health. So it's like, no one's going to turn up. It's going to be a disaster. I won't know what I'm talking about. Everything's going to go wrong. And then you get yourself worked up into a lather. And I got sort of there and I got set up and I was getting set up and people, there was nobody there in my little area, in my little theater. And I thought, oh God, this is really bad. And then it just started to creep in. People were coming in and I was like, oh gosh, there's more and more. And then it was full. And I was like, oh my God, this is worse. What am I going to do? And this technician came out, he put the headset on me and a microphone, and that paralyzed me because all of a sudden, no matter what I did or said, it was going to be heard. And I thought, oh no. And then I just thought, what are you doing? You're just talking about what you do and you love. So let's just go for it. And I just thought, you know what? The worst thing that can happen is I'm making an absolute ass of myself. And that's fine. And I really don't mind because they've come along to waste their time, to take some of their time to come and see me. And I thought, well, let's do it. And so I just started making, and to think that, as you said, from the man who was trying to, you know, celebrating making a piece of toast, to be able to sort of present, these are ways that I can help you learn to cook, love to cook, want to cook. It was just like, so it was this pinch me moment. It was massively, you know, huge. And then people coming up afterwards to say, that was great. I really enjoyed that. I'm going to try this. Or what? How did you do that again? And it creates that community again of people wanting to know a bit more about how cooking can become something a bit more than the bit you squeeze into all the other bits. And that's one of the things I really try and push is make cooking a big part of your day. Make it something that you celebrate doing well. Don't make it the bit that you squeeze into everything else, because then you're really not going to enjoy it and you're not going to like it.
And So did you like, because I know when I first started doing any sort of publicy kind of stuff, did you find like a bit of a passenger, like surreal when people start giving you good feedback? So you say you do catastrophize, and many of us with these long-term health conditions are a little bit sort of like mentally damaged, aren't we, from living with that and everything. And then you kind of think, what, it's a pinch me moment, isn't it? And you're like, what is going on?
Totally. And I think once I started rambling. And I was going off, and I was sort of talking about things. I was jumping around. I was going here, there, and everywhere. And I suddenly looked at the people who were sat in the front row. They were in their wheelchairs, and they were looking at me and listening to every single word I said. And then I thought, okay, let's just take a breath and calm down. And one of the things I also talk about is about giving yourself time. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to step back a second, just take a breather. And I'll go again, because I don't think I'd taken a breath for 2 minutes. I was just going trying to get it all out. And then it like, just calm down. What am I doing? I'm just showing people how to enjoy cooking. So let's enjoy it. And I just got back to enjoying it. And someone coming up to say, I really, really enjoyed that, was like, why? Why did you find that good? It's only me. And it's like, well, and it's, I still to this day find it very hard to understand why people would come and listen to me talking about stuff, but I love it, you know. I love doing it. So
and I think I think it's not knowing why that is that makes you so likable and good, you know. Like I had someone tell me that once, and I never really thought about it too much, but that is, I think that is because there is no ego, and we're doing it for the right reasons, and we're trying to, you know, make a difference to someone's day. And I think that comes across. It certainly is coming across tonight, Ian. So it's just amazing. And it's nice to know that good things can happen to good people. And I think, again, I think I probably hinted that a bit earlier, but I think it's really important for anyone watching this who wants to, you know, you don't have to do stuff on a massive stage or on a massive scale, but just find that one thing that you love or use a skill, because there are so many skills that are transferable into the whole awareness and advocacy space that people don't realize. Like for me, it was writing, and then somehow I end up here tonight talking on camera with purple lights behind me. That was a bit of a blur how that sort of 2 years unfolded. You know what I mean? But for you, it was cooking, and for someone else, it might be something else. So I think it's really important, isn't it, that people just sort of like pull at that thread and just see what, because it's a confidence thing as well, isn't it? It gives you that confidence.
Certainly. Yeah, it is. And I think sometimes you can think too much about what it is I want to do. If you sort of take it to why do you want to do it, and then you'll probably find it somehow. And it might be two or three things that you think, I'll try one, didn't really work. That's okay. Try another one. And I went through a little stage of writing poetry. I've never written poetry in my life, but actually it allowed me to articulate in sort of written word how I was feeling before I was able to say it verbally. So, you know, you might find drawing is a thing that is your way. It could be anything. It could be fixing cars. It could be whatever it is. But if you find something that gives you a little bit of a, when you think about it and think, oh, I'm looking forward to this, then you're probably on the right track.
That is brilliant advice. It really is. And then you just pull that thread and see where it takes you guys, like genuinely. Yeah. And before we get, because I'm getting lots of questions, people want to know about your toast and what you cooked. And before we get onto the sort of cooking specific side, I just wanted to touch slightly on like the work you do with like the Footstep Festival stuff and everything, because I'm quite new to that whole, you know, I've spent the last couple of years talking a lot about mental health and my arthritis and stuff. And I've only recently just got the sort of confident, I think it's fair to say, like courage, like to talk about pain, because I don't know about your experience, it can be a really delicate subject when you're saying, you mentioned it earlier about the whole pull yourself together, that's not what we're saying, but when you start saying to people about it being in your head, that's a really difficult conversation, and how you manage just that and distract yourself from it. And so it took me a lot of years, I think, of doing all of this sort of stuff to get that confidence. And then I stumbled upon the group of people you're involved with, like yourself and Nikki and others, and it's like, I remember sort of, I burst downstairs to my wife after my first sort of interaction with some of you guys, and so I said, oh my god, there's a group that exists that thinks just like me and has been through that whole pain journey. Do you want to just maybe explain a little bit about that and the Footsteps Festival and what that tries to achieve?
I mean, the festival is it's an online sort of virtual festival, and it's got everything that a festival has. So it's got, like, I was in the street kitchen. It'd have a sort of a mindfulness tent. It's got a coffee area and whatever. So it's set up like that. And initially it was only going to be for a year, and they sort of got in touch with me, and we were sharing thoughts and ideas about what could I do that might add a bit of value to this festival. And it was really offering people sort of reactive stuff, so they could go on and have a look and find little areas of resource, but also they had little live events they could go to, but they were also recorded. You know, now on a Monday they have a coffee and chat evening where you just go in, and if you want to just sit and listen, you just sit and listen, and if you want to talk, you can talk. But it's all people who will understand you and will get where you are, because they're all at different areas on their sort of road. So they said to me, what about doing some cooking demos? And I was like, this was before I'd done any demos. They were sort of where I was born from, I guess, in this. And I did one, because I thought I'll do one, no one will like it, that'll be the end of that. And I did one, and it was pretty awful, to be brutally honest. It wasn't the best stuff. But we did it, and then we had a sort of a live bit after. We played the video, and then we had a chat afterwards, and it was just extraordinary. People just asking questions about, how did you do that? What was that for? People sharing ideas of, I would put this in, why wouldn't you do that? And I was like, this is amazing. So we did a whole series of them. I did sort of 6 one-hour sessions of making 3 dishes, lots of chat. All of these are on the Footsteps Festival website as well. So they're all there. You can go on and have a look. All the dishes are there. And then we did another series, and then another series. So I've done 3 series with them of cook-alongs now. And they're just great fun, because they're all recorded. They're all set up for people. And if you don't go to the cooking one, they do sort of on Zentangling, they do mindfulness, they do everything. So it's a brilliant resource, all sort of done by people, volunteers who are like us. You know, they just want to try and help people, and it helps them as well. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's like I say, for me, it was just such an eye-opening thing to find, like, you know, because that journey is rough, isn't it, for a lot of us? Yeah. You know, we go through that, like we've talked about earlier today, and you're told to take all this stuff, and then you start realizing there's other ways of managing it. You start trying to peel that back, and nobody talks about how horrendous, like you alluded to a little bit earlier, about how horrendous that experience can be, whether it's mental health drugs or painkillers. And if people think it's like class A illegal drugs where people go through that experience, it's really, really not. And I've had some horrendous ones. So then to find people that just get that and believe in the other way of trying to cope with it, you know, and there's no one magic bullet here. It is a sort of let's put it in Ian terms, a dish of, you know, you take a bit of what works for you and you find that solution. It was a real eye-opening thing for me, so I'm so glad I found it. And that ultimately is then what made me stumble across what you were doing. And on behalf of as a pain patient, thank you to all you guys for everything you've done with that project.
They really are brilliant.
Before I'm conscious of time, and it is a Sunday night, and I'm always really grateful for anyone that gives up their time. Before I let you go, we have got some food-related questions. Are you happy to answer those?
Yeah, let's go for it. Yeah.
Brilliant. And guys, I suppose this is your final call. If you want to put any more in chat, whichever platform you're watching on, then please do. If they're bonus points, if they could be related to sort of like, you know, disability adaptions, adjustments, everything. And I'm probably going to kick off with the first one by saying, like, you know, what would be the, I don't know, top couple of tips that you'd give for somebody that has got, you know, so I get arthritis in my hands and everything, in terms of like trying to make cooking enjoyable when it can be a bit of a frustrating and painful experience?
A couple of things really is talk, I talk about sort of smart ingredients, smart equipment. So smart ingredients, I mean things that are ready chopped for you. So there's a bit of a stigma about frozen ready chopped veg. There shouldn't be, because it's brilliant and it's really, really useful. Like chopping, every time I talk about this, trying to chop an onion is lethal. You know, you try and peel it, you start crying, you try and chop, it fires across the kitchen, and you think, and you might, you know, if your hands aren't functioning, it's impossible. So I have a bag of ready chopped onion in my freezer. I always do, because 9 times out of 10, I can't cut an onion. So I use that. Am I cheating? Hell no, I'm actually doing the right thing. It's brilliant. So, and using ready chopped, some of the frozen veg now, most of it is picked the same time as the fresh, and it's fresher because it's been frozen straight away. So use it. And things like ready chopped garlic and pastes, I hate it that it's called lazy garlic. It's not lazy garlic. It's very, very clever garlic, because, you know, you can get it out and use it, and it gives you a boost start to your cooking. So don't be frightened of using ingredients that are going to help you get you further along the stage of, you know, to enjoyment. Because if you start off with something that you hate, you're not going to, either you're not going to finish it or you're not going to want to do it. Secondly, is give yourself some time. You tend to feel like you have to rush in the kitchen. You get in there, pressure's on. Oh, no. Get your music playing. If you love music, just play it. Yeah. You know, get it going. Get it. All your favorite songs going. Sing along. And just take your time with it. Because if you, as I said earlier, if you make cooking a real celebratory part of your day that says, do you know what I've achieved today? I cooked a meal. And that should be the best thing, rather than, do you know what I achieved today? Lots of things, but I hate the last bit where I tried to do the meal in the middle. Make the meal the celebratory part of it. No, maybe not every day, but just feel it like, because if I now say to my wife, you know what, I've just made dinner for tonight and I feel like absolute rubbish, and it's like, yay, well done, and you should be proud of it. Cooking is hard. It's really, really hard when you're struggling physically and mentally, so celebrate the hell out of everything you do. Even if you burn it, you cremate it, it's a disaster, it doesn't matter. Try and focus on the bit before it where you enjoy getting to that point, because things are going to go wrong, and just go with it and enjoy it and have a good laugh at yourself, because laughter is a thing that you lose very quickly when you're struggling with pain. And it feels a bit weird to laugh, but actually now I've encouraged my daughters to laugh at me if things go wrong. I did an online live event the other day, and I was holding up some broccoli and I was calling it cauliflower for the whole thing. And my daughters didn't tell me the whole way through. They were just wetting themselves laughing. But now it's a joke. You know, it probably would have tipped me over the edge 10 years ago. But now it's like, so just enjoy it, you know, go with it.
Amazing advice, and I think we all just saw in that few minutes there exactly why you might not see it, but we can see why you deserve to get called up by the likes of Nadex to give these talks, because your passion is just amazing for it, and some great advice. And I often say to my other half, she has to pick up a lot of the cooking, because if by the end of the day I'm at my worst point, I'm a morning person that gets worse. And I have to say, I have to have time to cook, to enjoy it. I can't do the rush thing. And I'm very much music blasting kind of person. So, yeah, I can very much relate to that. some of the questions we've got. Simon's asked, I want to know the one dish you love making. I'm sure you love making lots, but I suppose what's the one that you want, if you have to pick one?
Probably the dish that sums up everything that I do is a bolognese. And the reason is that I use chops, frozen onion. I've got, and sometimes I'll make it, and it might be meat, it might be vegan, it might be gluten-free, but it's still there. And the thing with the bolognese, the why I think it's the most amazing thing is, one is it tastes great, but once you've made it, if you make a little bit more than you need and then freeze it, I'm not saying batch cook, because that fills me with horror of batch cooking. It's like rows of Tupperware out into the wilderness. It's like, no. So make a bit and then put it away. And then what's that? And that is now in your freezer. When you're having a really bad day, and you, like you say, at the end, you really can't do it. If you get that out of your freezer, you should celebrate the hell that you've still cooked, because you might have made it 3 weeks ago, but it doesn't matter, because you still made it. And you were thinking, actually, I'm going to need this someday. And you get it out and you've heated it up, but you've cooked. And that bolognese, now you can turn it into loads of different dishes, add some spice for a chili, so many different things you can do. And that's really what I'm all about, is making simple food help you rather than it being a disaster.
Yeah, they're brilliant. Thank you. And you're inspiring lots of people in the chat across the various platforms to start cooking. So you're clearly doing a good job. one that we got here from Nia is, they'd like to know how you do your famous toast. How toasty and what topping? So maybe more of a lower skill question now.
Well, you know what? A toast, it can still be hard. If you either, even if you've got a toaster or a grill, it's still blimmin' hot. So you can cause yourself some damage. Initially, just a bit of butter. That's where it started. But actually, that toast formed the basis of the book that I wrote, Cookfulness, because in there I've got eggy bread. And eggy bread is just the most brilliant thing as well, because it's just eggs and bread that you sort of fry. So it just, because it's a piece of toast can then become croutons. It can become all kinds of things. So toast is a great skill, just like boiling an egg is. But initially it was toast and butter.
Brilliant. And there's also a lot of dislike for batch cooking in chat as well, so you're not alone. I think many of us have got first experiences of that, of like when we started going to the gym or something like that. Was my first experience with it, and I was like, yeah, that was a big hard pass for me.
Yeah, I call it little extra cooking now, because it just feels a bit easier. It's just like making one bit more than you need, put it in the freezer, you're done.
Yeah. So where can people find your book, Ian? I feel like I probably should have asked this by now. So where can people find that?
It's on Amazon and Waterstones and Goodreads, just Cookfulness with one L. And then also if you, on my website on cookfulness.co.uk, there's a link in there to it as well.
Brilliant. Thank you. And like I say, anyone who's watching this back, because what we do is we top and tail the interview only, so that if people just want to watch the interview, we'll put all of that in the description, guys. You'll have that available. And I've now seen that people in chat started talking about Marmite, which feels like a really good point for us to wrap this up before we go down that rabbit hole. Revolt and stuff, in my opinion, but there we go.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, good. Ian, thank you so much for joining us. Like, generally, a bit of personal info here, guys. Like, I still struggle, even though we do all this every week and I do multiple streams every week, I still struggle, especially with the talk show bit. Imposter syndrome, I always feel like my guest is here and I'm down here, and you know, all day it's on the back of my mind. But then within 5 minutes of these conversations, I wake up and I realize exactly why we do this, and you are just like the perfect example of that. Like, I could have talked to you for 2-3 hours tonight. It was really insightful. I'd love to have you back. Maybe we could do a cooking demo or something, if we can make that work technically. Yeah, that'd be great.
Definitely. No, I mean, genuinely, same for me. I've been all day, I've been so excited but petrified at the same time, thinking, oh, am I going to freeze, whatever. But yeah, I would love to come back, and you know, if we wanted to do it again, I could send out a list of ingredients ahead and we could make something together, like literally live.
That'd be terrifying, but amazing.
I'd make it very easy, where you didn't need any heat or anything. It would just be something we could just do together and try it and actually eat it within the same time as making it.
Yeah, that sounds, there's lots of, people are very excited about that in chat. So I feel like I've already committed myself to that, Ian. So yeah, we'll get that booked in. And if anyone wants to find you on social media or anything, do you want to just give yourself a little plug for that now?
Yeah, thank you. So Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all at Cookfulness. I say the website's www.cookfulness.co.uk. There's a YouTube channel, loads of free recipes and demos on there. And if you get stuck with anything, you can just drop me a note and I'll try and help you.
Superb. So Ian, on behalf of everyone here, and just relaying what we've got come through in chat, thank you so much for your time tonight. And yeah, we very much look forward to having you back. And then I will be very much the one under the spotlight and feeling nervous when we do our cooking demo.
Thank you. Genuinely, thank you for having me on. It's a real honour and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Brilliant. Absolutely wonderful, man. Thank you, Ian. Have a good rest of your evening and have a good week ahead. All right.
Thank you. And you.